Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Cynthia McKinney back. I love talking to her. She is just an amazing person. And she's coming back. She's going to talk to us about hashtag NRIG, what happened there and where she's at with that. A lot of people want to know what's going on there. And then she's going to talk about general politics in what's going on with the world. We don't dive into the latest events like Las Vegas and things, maybe a little bit with some of the hurricane things. But in general, we're talking about what's going on in the world and why it's like the way it is. And then she's going to talk about her future possibilities for running again for office, which I really hope she decides to do. But let's get into my interview now with Cynthia McKinney. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, Sarah. Happy to be back.
I'm so glad. I love talking to you. You're just the greatest. Let's dive.
I think it's a sisterhood thing because I enjoy it too.
Well, good. Yeah, well, I got to tell you, and I was just telling somebody this morning that was a really good friend of mine that I ran into at the coffee shop. And I was telling him, you know, you are somebody that I would follow just because of your integrity and your whole ethics point. Like if you, whatever you were doing, you're someone I want to, you know, help be a leader because of how ethical and how much integrity you have. And that's what's lacking. And you know, we're blessed to have someone like you.
Well, thank you so much. I try to walk my talk.
Well, let's dive into what you've been recently working on. You recently left UNRIG, hashtag UNRIG, with Robert David Steele. Why did you leave and what do you have going on now?
Okay, well, that's a very interesting question because I'm not quite so sure that I've left. Basically, what I've come up with is a role for myself that allows me to walk my talk. And for a very long time, I've been interested in bringing the left and the right, the conservative and the liberal, the conservative and the progressive, the Democrat, independent, Republican, bringing all of this political matter together, assembling it so that we could actually reach down deep for transformational change. And so that, I believe, is what I want to work on with hashtag UNRIG. So it's not exactly that I've left hashtag UNRIG, but it's that my mission has kind of veered now to the power cells. I would like to develop those power cells. I see potential, great potential in those power cells. I remember that I was at Riverside Church in New York City, which is where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. made his very famous anti-Vietnam War speech. So I have been asked to go there and to give a speech. And Mike Rupert was with me. So Mike Rupert and I are together, and basically this is where I roll out this idea that we all have to come together. And at that time I was thinking black people and white people and Latinos and everybody in between, right? That we all have to come together. But now I've broadened that diversity appeal to ideological diversity as well. And so if we all just sit down, and maybe the ideological diversity is actually even more expansive because then you get that entire range. Well, anyway, I was telling the audience along with Mike that I had read all of the COINTELPRO papers. Everyone knows that I'm a student of COINTELPRO, Senator Frank Church's committee reports that were done about the intelligence excesses committed by U.S. intelligence services against the people of the United States, also including assassination attempts on foreign leaders. And so buried in that paperwork is this, it's the COINTELPRO papers that target the black, what they call the black hate, black nationalist hate groups. And there they say that they have to devise a strategy to separate these blacks from what they call responsible blacks. And then they also devise a strategy to separate whites who might be sympathetic to the economic and social justice causes of this black nationalist hate group type that they're targeting. So they wanted to do all of this divide and rule, right? And the one component that was viewed by them to be the absolute worst was this component of bringing black people and white people together to address the economic and social justice grievances of the black community. And so that night at the Riverside Church, I said, let's give them some nightmares. Let them not have one night's sleep. And that was the beginning of my idea about actually doing this. The power cell idea is the implementation, or the power cell methodology, I should say, is the implementation of that idea that is at least, 10 years old. So now I've got a lot invested in these power cells. So I want to see it through. The objective is to have at least one person from each congressional district in all of the 50 states. And so bringing these people together, then I will allow them, when they actually register, I will allow them to place themselves on the political spectrum as either populist right all the way straight through center to populist left. My idea, not yet congealed into a theory, is that the issues of the populist right and the issues of the populist left actually converge. Now, the practical experience that I have with this is in 2008, when I was the presidential nominee for the Green Party. And it was Ron Paul who brought us together, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Independent Party, the Constitution Party with Chuck Baldwin, and Ralph Nader as the Independent. And so basically we all came together and we said, what can we agree on? We could agree that we were anti-war. We could agree that we were anti-Federal Reserve. And there was something, I think it was, reining in the federal budget was the third item. And so in all three of those, there was agreement and readiness to sit down and work out the nuts and bolts. So what I see the power cell idea as is the opportunity for what was done in 2008 to actually be implemented on a grassroots level. So I think what I've done is I've given Robert some space in order to do some introspection, as we all need to do. And at the same time, I'm working my job as well, teaching my 200 students that I have, who are both undergraduate and graduate students, and then working on this power cell idea. I actually have a draft concept paper of how, and what I'm calling it is implementing or transforming ethical, implementing ethical governance through appreciative inquiry, so that when all of these different people sit down in the same room at the same table, that one, we dispel some of the mythology that's been created about those people who are alt-right, populist right, conservative right, right, whatever, and the same on the left. And then I think what we will discover is that the foundation of it all is that we're human. We're human beings, right?
Well, I don't want to cut you off, but I think there's even more of a connection now with the corruption issue. I think just those three issues that you brought up, plus the corruption, just those platform issues could fundamentally change our country and then put us on a different trajectory.
Absolutely. And so what would that trajectory be? Finally, it would be whatever the trajectory is that the people, we the people, want. And so basically what I'm advocating is that, one, we use the behavioral sciences in order to unrig ourselves. Because remember, we have been conditioned through hundreds of years of conditioning by those who would divide us and then rule us. So we've got to unrig ourselves. And then secondly, through this unrig power cell process, I believe that we can implement deep, what they call second order transformational change throughout our political system. So we need systemic change. But in order to get to the systemic change, we've got to work on ourselves as well as working on the system. And we've got to do that together. I also pull from Paulo Freire, who gave us mechanisms of oppression and tools for liberation. And Paulo Freire, 50 years ago, wrote that one of the most potent mechanisms of oppression was divide and rule. What's the antidote to divide and rule? Unity for liberation. We, the people of the United States, need to liberate ourselves from the deep state. We need to liberate ourselves from the individuals who are now in control of the policymaking apparatus of the state. And how can we do that? It's hard work. And so we're just going to have to do it one congressional district at a time, one individual at a time, one state at a time. And I believe that hashtag unrig and the power cells is the way in which to do it. At least it's not the only way. Of course, we know that. It's one way. And it's my contribution. I feel now I'm really committed to my contribution to unrigging my country. And the other thing that I want to mention is that we're looking for these volunteers. And therefore, for those who would like to volunteer, the contact information is contact@unrig.net. That information then, I've got to figure this part out because all of that information goes to Robert. And so I need to get it sort of real time too. I don't mind that it goes to Robert and then he sends it over to me. It might be nice that I would have the independent database, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is for people who are interested in volunteering and working through this process to reach out to us at contact@unrig.net. Now, here's the next thing. So I was trying to do Robert sent me a spreadsheet of those who had volunteered thus far. And so I was trying to compose an email saying, welcome, let's sort of get started on this. And I went through MailChimp, which is integrated into my website. So when I composed the message and then tried to send it. And it was like, okay, I'm back, right? I posted it on my Facebook page. I'm back and just catching up. So as it was more of a test to see if I could actually send it, MailChimp said that I violated their terms of service. So I couldn't understand what I had done wrong because all of the photos belonged to me. The books that I was advertising, not really advertising, but, you know, just saying, okay, and I've written, since the last time you've seen me by email, I've written 2 books. So I had links to those books with their cover art. So, I mean, everything
belongs. There was nothing wrong with it. They just, okay.
So then what I did was I put it out that I was having this problem and I solicited help. So I got back several other possibilities. One of the other possibilities was Wix. W-I-X is an email client. So it took me a day to learn how to do the email again, to put all the things back together again. And then the second time I tried to send, I got a violation of terms of service with no explanation as to what the violation is. Same thing that MailChimp did, Wix did as well. So then I said, okay, well, I'll just make my own because, you know, people who have nothing know how to do something with nothing. And so I don't need them anyway. And so I used what I have to make a template of a newsletter. And I would just use that template and send out as best I can in the way that I can do. It's not ideal, but at least I can communicate. And so now I've decided that, okay, now that I've tried twice, and what did Bush say, fool me twice? He couldn't think of, you know, what you do when you fool me 3 times, but I'm not going to let them get to 3 times. And so I will begin now my communication with those who have already, I think we have probably about 300 who already have volunteered. But what I have to make sure of is that we've got every congressional district represented. This is a way for us to make peace. And honey, you know that the purveyors of hatred and division are fully financed.
Yeah, that's
and
too bad.
So they are going to be everywhere. What we need to be is as many places as we can be, and social media allows us to do that. Now, let me also just say another thing. I have detected faux unrig efforts. What I mean by that is that hashtag unrig was Robert David Steele's idea. And he sort of, you know, emailed me until I said, okay, yeah, it's a great idea. And it is a great idea. And I think it's needed. It's what we do with it, right? But in the targeting that has taken place to destroy Robert David Steele, what I have seen is that there are other efforts out there for unrig-type events, but those unrig-type events come nowhere near the idea of bringing people together independent of the deep state. What I would say is that the deep state has figured out this is potent, people like the idea, therefore we've got to destroy theirs and substitute ours. So people must beware of faux, F-A-U-X, unrigged that are actually products of the deep state and Hollywood, I might add.
You know, another thing about you is that you have had many sacrifices. Talking about the deep state and them getting involved, you've been doing amazing things trying to help society and help us move forward. But you've had to endure a lot of things. Can you talk about some of the losses and some of the stuff that's happened to you while you're in office and out of office that, you know, are sacrifices that you've had to make? Well, sacrifices of others, if you will.
Yeah. I tell you, Roseanne Barr brought me to tears when she dedicated her 2012. She quote unquote ran for president, and then she made a movie from that experience, and the movie was dedicated to a guy who basically had been with me all of my political career. And he was the accountant for my campaign accounts. So he did the campaign accounts for her. And he dies in around the same time.
You don't know how he died, just kind of a mysterious death.
He was found in his bedroom. He was found dead in his bedroom. And, well, it was devastating to me. But around the same time, another friend of mine who was like more like a political advisor, he was into strategizing and had begun outreach to some people who had been used by the anti-Cynthia McKinney deep state because they had indicated a readiness to spill the beans. And so he was going to start a newspaper. This was going to be his big first edition. He was also found, he's dead. Bottom line is that all of the people who were around me, part of my team, then my second accountant got a stroke, and on the same day I saw her, she was bubbling and happy and very pleased with herself, but she was also quite angry because I had been targeted by the FEC, and they denigrated her work because they told me, okay, the first accountant is no good, so I had to go out and hire a new accountant. It happened to be her. And new lawyer, I had to go out and do it. And then FEC was trying to, every holiday I would have some letter from the FEC, so I would have to spend my holidays and the people around me, my volunteers and supporters, going through boxes to satisfy the request from the FEC that had already been satisfied. So this was just, it was just harassment. And she questioned them because when she conducted the audit, she came, the FEC did an audit. They were not satisfied. They accused, so my lawyer said, if you think some criminal behavior has taken place, indict her. File a lawsuit against her. Of course, they didn't because they knew that I was honest. So this is how it comes that I understand transparency and the need for integrity because I have been through the ringer with them trying to put me in prison. They would have done it if they had found anything, because they definitely looked. And FEC could find nothing. They came within one penny, which is like unheard of when you're doing books, but FEC came within one penny. And the second accountant also, there was literally no discrepancy. And it's because when we took in cash donations, we Xeroxed the cash. If it was coins, we Xeroxed the coins. There was no question, right? So our record keeping was impeccable. And so then FEC did everything they could to just make my life miserable. And they did. But I was just thinking about this the other day. Some people always are sending me messages saying, well, you need to run for office, you need to run for Congress, you need to do this, you need. And I was thinking, okay, if I were to do something, everybody around me is gone. Literally everybody. Everybody.
How many is everybody?
My closest would be four people. They're gone.
And
I can't, you know.
I know.
All I know is they're gone. I had one friend, there was one incident that happened that was really telling. Because IRS, people complain about IRS. IRS seems to have gone back 20 years in one case for two people that were around me. They are still alive. Went back to my mom. Just literal harassment. And you name it, I've been there. I had two stalkers. The first stalker actually came to my home, and we were able to apprehend him because I had my own security. I understood when the FBI, there was this journalist, so-called journalist, who advocated that I be lynched on my way to vote. Mm-hmm. And we later found out that that journalist was on the FBI payroll. So I knew that I had been COINTELPRO. I understood COINTELPRO. I understood it because my father, being in politics, was surveilled under COINTELPRO. Being an elected official, a black elected official, during that time, Operation Fruit Mention, the reason we know about it is because of, what's that guy's name? Larry Flint made it public, but my father lived it. My mother's on the telephone and she hangs up the phone. She's talking to her sister-in-law. She hangs up the phone and then she picks the phone back up in order to make a second call. And the conversation that she had just finished with her sister-in-law is being replayed. So she could listen as her conversation, listened to her conversation, told my dad about it. We had guys that, because my dad was also with the civil rights movement, we live up on a hill. They were at the bottom of the hill and they followed my dad wherever he went. So I've lived COINTELPRO, which of course is why I have made it my study. I have studied the COINTELPRO papers. I understand the role that targeted assassination plays in U.S. policy. And so if there's someone in your way, of course, this is before there was any knowledge by me of the phenomenon known as the deep state. That comes much later. But there were certain individuals who had control over the reins of policy, and they were writing documents, they were writing policy documents that were never supposed to see the light of day, that they never expected to see the light of day. And thank goodness those progressives that broke into the FBI, as the FBI was breaking into the homes of activists and fomenting divide and rule strategies and actually knocking off people in targeted assassination, those documents were made public and became known as the COINTELPRO papers. The COINTELPRO papers then kicked off the Frank Church committee hearings and the Otis Pike House of Representatives hearing on the excesses of the intelligence of the U.S. intelligence services that also included efforts by the U.S. government to assassinate foreign leaders. So I have studied all of this, understand how the deep state operates, and then thank goodness I was allowed to even do more study. There was Dr. Laura Roberts, who is a part of the Antioch Leadership and Change Program, Antioch University. She told me, Cynthia, don't stay in your same neighborhood. Spread your wings. So then what I did as part of my PhD studies, I looked at the COINTELPRO against the American Indian Movement. And I was stunned. So here you have the father of the father who is a special agent at the FBI carrying out heinous acts against citizens who only want justice and full participation in whatever the meaning of the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution is, whatever that is, they want it for everybody, and then against the war in Vietnam at that time. And they are targeted by their government, and the American Indian Movement, the son of that special agent, continues and is the special, becomes the special agent in charge targeting Puerto Rican independence movement activists, etc. So
is that the same thing that was happening to the Tea Party and possibly to cattle ranchers who are all losing their land in Oregon and things like that? Because I know that there's, 70 different ranches that have been flooded out and they lose their land. You know, so it's happening all over the spectrum.
It's happening. That's right. And so we have to do the best that we can to understand what's happening in our environment. So, Lavoie Finicum being murdered in the same way in which I can't remember his name now, but he's a Puerto Rican machetero who was murdered by the FBI. He was in his home. It was a shootout, and he's in his home. So we can't forget all these people, the Waco, the Ruby Ridge. You know, there have been too many instances of people, of the excesses of government over individuals who are just trying to live and trying to survive. And so anyway, I don't forget those things. I don't forget Ruby Ridge and other excesses that have taken place against transgressions against the people of the U.S.
Well, you know, what's interesting is every single time I put a video of you up, it's automatically demonetized. So I find that there's no one else, just you, that is automatically demonetized, and it's even the most simple. So, listeners, we are going to test this one out, see if I don't have your name in it, and we're going to test different titles and see what happens. But has anybody else told you that that happens to them, or is it just my interviews with you that are consistently being demonetized?
Well, that's very interesting because, well, I've seen this phenomenon now from other outlets. Of course, at one point there was this troll activity that was following me, following hashtag Unrig and Robert David Steele, so to get the trolls come out, and they do very ugly things. But the recognition is that you've got about 12,000 people on the Israeli payroll, and this is their job, is to troll. So I would not be surprised at all at anything that is produced by trolls, because now that's become big government business.
Well, that's too bad, because, you know.
It's a shame.
Well, now that you brought up the Israeli thing, what do you think of the fact that we're not allowed to discuss Zionism without it being, you know, it's Zionism is a political concept, and it's a political, we should be able to debate it. And so what do you think about that versus, you know, that being tied to anti-Semitism? So anytime you even talk about Zionism or talk about the Israeli, you know, how we work with Israel, you're suddenly an anti-Semitic. What do you think about that? And then continue on to the fact that every time that we do talk about it, the anti-Semitics do come out of the woodwork and start making all this anti-Jew stuff. So there is some issue with that as well.
Well, you know, Gilad Atzman is a great friend of mine. And so he's written a new book to which I wrote the foreword, but I intended it to be the postscript because he wrote the book kind of backwards. And so it seemed to me that if the beginning was really the end, then instead of being the foreword, it should be the postscript, right? But anyway, so he writes this book about, I see, or at least let me put it this way. I wrote about how the deep state of the U.S. transformed. And, you know, I think you and I have talked about my theory of the bifurcated deep state. And so now you've got these two sides, and they're fighting it out, duking it out with each other. So anyway, now I'm trying to remember where I came.
We were talking about Zionism and why we can't publicly debate that without being called anti-Semitics. And then when you do debate it, the anti-Semitics do come out. And what's all with that?
Well, so this is why I was going with Gilad, because at some point, one has to define, I guess, who are the Zionists and what does that mean? What does that mean for Zionists and what does it mean for non-Zionists? What does that mean? And so Gilad is having this discussion as a former Israeli, former Jew. The other issue that Gilad raises is if Israel is the Jewish state of Israel, what does that mean in terms of in terms of, what does that mean in terms of Israeli behavior on the international stage? What conclusions can we draw from that? Now, on the other hand, you've got this same old thing about the minister, that video of the minister saying, oh, it's just a, you know, it's just a game we play when we call people anti-Semitic. That is out there. And so there's this other saying that, how can I put it? Let me see. It's that anti-Semites are the people that Jews don't like. But there's another thing. There's a whole different aspect to this. And, you know, we're going to talk about Semitism. What is Semitism, right? And who are the Semites that they're anti? So, you know, you can get into all of this kind of stuff and never really arrive at a point. So basically, I like to stay fact-based, evidence-based, and just talk about what folk do. And if you look at the latest outrage, basically, you've got these people who commit heinous acts, and we're not supposed to talk about it. For example, one example is Israel's repeated bombing of Gaza. Now, I happen to have been to Gaza, so I know that Gaza is this tiny little strip of land on the Mediterranean Sea. And because I do believe that the Yenom plan written by Oded Yenom is alive and well, and I do believe that A Clean Break was a document written for Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu, and the subtitle is A Policy for Israel for the 1990s. And I believe that the A Clean Break policy is alive and well. So I pay attention to what Israel does to Palestine, and not only Palestine, but in the region, because Oded Yenom, it's known as the Yenom Plan, wrote a document that was built on by the Clean Break document. That document, both of them, outline the changes that we see literally taking place before our eyes that are being, that the U.S. military is being used for. Now, I object to that. And it's not that I object to that because it's Israel and Palestine. I object to it because of the human rights abuses that are taking place. I would object to it if it were Germany and France or, you know, anybody else. I object to it. And the more people learn about what takes place, then the more people object to it. But that, when you object to what is happening, like, for example, on one of my attempted trips to Gaza, I was taking coloring books because the kids in Gaza didn't have school supplies. So I went around and I collected a big, huge suitcase full of coloring books, crayons, watercolors, water markers, that sort of thing. And because there's a blockade, an illegal blockade of Gaza from its territorial waters on the Mediterranean, and we were trying to go there on the Mediterranean, the Israelis intercepted our boat. And this is the time when they literally kidnapped us and put us in prison. So I was in prison in Israel for 7 days.
Wow.
And the guards were so just mean and nasty They said, oh, thank you for bringing these coloring books for our Israeli children. They will really enjoy them. So I know that the poor kids in Gaza never got them because they were stolen by the Israelis. In addition to that, the Israelis in this blockade count the number of calories. So if you wanted to take chocolate, for example, chocolate increases the caloric intake of the Palestinians, and so therefore chocolate is on the banned list.
You're kidding.
It goes like that. They are just keeping them just above death so that they can say that they're not killing them. They're still alive, but what the effort is to get them to leave so that then Israel can move into that land. All I would ask your audience to do is to read the Oded Yanom plan, which is available online, and then look up Project for a New American Century and read the Clean Break plan. And all of the things, the bombing of Pakistan, bombing Afghanistan, splitting Pakistan and off Balochistan off of Pakistan and creating another country there, the creation of Kurdistan, the creation of ISIS itself. I mean, everything. And so you've got these individuals in the U.S. who really are not quite right, because they have not read the information that is readily available to them. If you don't trust the sort of like the sources, general sources, go directly to the journal in which the Oded Yanom plan was written. Go directly to the Project for a New American Century website, although they have now changed their name. And but go directly to those documents and see them for yourself, and then look at the Blood Borders map, which is the concretization of these two plans that are basically the same plan. Oded Yanom was writing for Israel for the 80s. Clean Break is writing for Israel for the 90s. So now these things do exist, and it's incumbent upon the people of the United States to read these things so that they can know what their tax dollars are being used for. And if they disagree with it, then to speak up and do something about it. That's all. But you've got people who are running around looking for Muslims, when they really have taken their eyes off the prize. You know, in the civil rights movement, we used to say, keep your eyes on the prize, right? And they really have taken their eyes off the prize. It's the Federal Reserve. Check out the Federal Reserve. Check out why the United States is engaged in these wars. Why is the U.S. bombing Pakistan, Afghanistan, Somalia, split Sudan, bomb Libya, bomb Syria? Why is this taking place? And all you have to do is go back to who controls. Wesley Clark told us that it was Paul Wolfowitz and that crowd. And then, interestingly, strikingly, you find Paul Wolfowitz involved, Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl, and these same guys, you find them as policymakers in the Pentagon and in the State Department. So then they've embedded themselves into the bureaucracy that makes the decisions about how the U.S. military is used. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. It's very clear.
So,
and then, of course, if you look at, you don't even stop there, because we should remember the SAMS report that was published September 10th, 2001. That was a report that said that the Mossad, should U.S. troops be placed in Israel, that the Mossad was cunning enough to attack those troops and make it appear as if the Arabs / Muslims had done it. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a report produced by the U.S. Army. It's a SAMS report. Look it up. It's available on the military websites. Just go there. And so you can see that it is an authentic document. And what did Trump just do? He placed U.S. troops in Israel proper. So we've got the, there's another thing too as well. And of course, you know that one of my sheroes is Catherine Austin Fitz. She's been through a lot herself. And that's because she found that there was $1 trillion missing from HUD. And she discovered that while she was just trying to do her job, and she wanted to do it well. And at the same time, just a little bit later, I'm over at in the Congress, and Donald Rumsfeld says there's $2.3 trillion missing, and nobody is like, what? We gotta get that money back. Well, guess what? Catherine also reminds me, crime that pays is crime that stays. So now the $3 trillion in the two departments has ballooned to $18 trillion. There's a Michigan State professor who is now working with Catherine to identify all of the, it's not missing, it's somebody got it. It's just that they don't want to tell us who got it.
Well, and that's what I'd love to have her on. I had her scheduled and then she had to cancel, and then we rescheduled and then I had to cancel, and now I can't get her back on. So maybe you can help me with that.
Yes, I will be more than happy to help you with that. She is wonderful. Anyway, the point I want to make is that I just looked it up for the purposes of this interview. It's morning where I am. And I looked it up this morning. It was 25 years ago that I warned about an extremely pernicious presence in Washington, D.C. that had nothing to do with We the People and that was subverting our policy. 25 years ago, I issued the warning. And now, the full embodiment of that is now taking place with people who are experiencing damage from Hurricane Harvey in Texas, and they want to access funds to rebuild their homes or replace their possessions or whatever, have to sign a pledge that they are not boycotting Israel. My father, a long time ago, asked the question, what does Israel have to do with Stone Mountain, Georgia? What does Israel have to do with Dickinson, Texas? Everything. What does Israel have to do with the use of U.S. military around the world? people and destroying whole countries. Everything. And it's all written in those documents. If you care about humanity and you care about peace, you will be compelled to learn about what the United States is doing and who's doing it.
So
who is doing it?
So would you say that the 25 years, if not longer, what we're seeing now with the suicides in our military, with our schools crumbling, with the lack of focus on our infrastructure, I mean, you name it, all this stuff is simply because we're not focused on the U.S. anymore. We're focused on the desires of another country.
The United States of America ceased to exist for a lot of people a long time ago. And maybe the United States of America, the idea and the ideal, maybe it never existed, say, for example, for our Native Americans. But there's something called the Constitution. And even though it's not a perfect document, our political system is not a perfect political system, we would be so much better off if we, the people, subscribe to the United States Constitution and made sure that it applied to everything we do and it applied to everyone that is a citizen. I can't even imagine what the U.S. would be like if I enjoyed the protections of the U.S. Constitution. This is a conversation that Catherine and I have been having back and forth about the U.S. Constitution. There are some people who want to change it and have a constitutional convention, but if we just enforce what we have and roll back those provisions in the law that roll back our rights, our civil liberties. So I think the idea of citizenship, fully engaged citizens, is there's just too many distractions out there and there's not enough of us who are committed. Just imagine, I warned about this 25 years ago, and now people in Dickinson, Texas can't get their relief for rebuilding their lives unless they swear that they are not boycotting Israel.
This is so ridiculous. That has nothing to do with what they need. That's ridiculous. Okay, so are you going to run for office again at some point? So many people want you back in Congress asking these questions.
Yes. You know, I have to tell you that I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. And it's such a snake pit in D.C.
It's 11 o'clock.
I became caricaturized out of who I am, and people believe the caricature, right? So for me to do something like that would be sacrificing again. So I need to see some movement on the part of the people. I need to see some less attention paid to knees and more attention paid to the wars, the killing, the death, destruction, the hatred, the division. I need to see some more serious attitudes. It's not that I rule it out. I don't rule it out. But maybe let's see what the power cells produce. Because that would be a nationwide coalition of people who at least we don't think alike. We don't have to think alike. but a nationwide coalition of people who are willing to work to make the United States better. You have that as a foundation, and yeah, anything is possible for the future.
Well, excellent. Let's close this out with you telling us where people can get hold of you, where they can learn about all this stuff, your website, you know.
Okay. Of course, I'm sort of on the social media at Facebook, Cynthia McKinney Official, on Twitter, Cynthia McKinney. I am about to open up a Steemit account that will be under my name, hopefully, if they will accept it. And BitChute and all of these other platforms that are coming out that don't censor, that I support. And then, of course, there's my website, allthingscynthiamckinney.com. And if you just click there, that's where you can sign up to receive the newsletter. You can reach out to me directly on the contact page using the contact form. I get those. I respond to everyone. I make it a point that if people go to my website, that I read what they write and that I respond to them. It's what I need to do. And which I don't always do in the social media, but you come to my website, you will definitely get a response from me. So I would love to have people volunteer for the power cells at contact@unrig.net. And then I will do periodic updates in whatever manner I'm allowed to do, given the fact that MailChimp and Wix have both stopped me sending out emails. So in whatever manner I am able to update the power cell volunteers, I will do that. And I look forward to hearing from people. And I also look forward to doing another interview with you. And let me tell you, I'm kind of excited. So I'm going to have a radio program. So I want to interview you.
Oh, that'd be great.
For my radio show. And the other thing is that what you see now, hopefully the next time we do an interview, will be totally transformed, because this is just an empty room, it's echoey, blah, 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 blah. So I'm going to have a real studio made in this room, and therefore I will have the proper lighting, because with my skin being so dark, I need lighting. So I will have the proper lighting and everything so that I can present myself better to the public. I have my ideas, and I know that that's grounded. And so now the rest of it is that cosmetic stuff that also will improve the sound quality and the visuals. So I'm looking forward to that, and that will be for our next interview.
Oh, excellent.
And I have some travel plans in the works. And I'll have a lot to talk about in terms of headlines that are political headlines now that are in the region. So things are, I'll have a lot to talk about.
Excellent. So you got a lot. Perfect. So people can learn a lot by going to your website and see everything that you're doing. And I'm so glad that you're really, there's a lot of people that want you to. So maybe it was a collective action of everybody telling you that they want you to that got you motivated.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I'm going to do the best that I can do with what I have. You know, you play the hand that's been given to you. And so I'm going to do that, and I don't spend a whole lot of time crying. We've discussed some things in this show that do make me cry, that make my eyes water up. But, you know, we have to move forward. There are a whole lot of people who are crying because their entire lives have been torn up. Their countries have been torn up. And if we have any empathy at all for them, we will do everything we can to stop the carnage.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and I really appreciate it.
I love your calm style. Thank you so much. You're good for me, too.